From KQED and the California Report, this is Capitol Notes, a weekly roundup of California politics from the state capitol in Sacramento.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from Vanguard, offering investments designed to help individuals and institutions reach their long-term financial goals. 1-888-VANGUARD.
Hello and welcome to this edition of the Capitol Notes podcast for the week ending October 12th. I'm John Myers from KQED Public Radio and the California Report, and this week a different Capitol Notes podcast, different format. This week, a one-on-one interview with Assembly Speaker Fabia Nunez. For those of you who follow California politics, you surely know that it's been a bit of a rough week for the Assembly Speaker. Last Friday, the Los Angeles Times had a lengthy and detailed piece where they chronicled how the Assembly Speaker has spent some of the money in his campaign accounts over the last few years, calling into question several thousand dollars in spending on trips around the world, on hotels, on dinners, on large amounts of money, it seemed, for office expenses as they're categorized. And as a result, it's been a bit of a controversial week for Nunez, who's been asked a lot of questions, who's been criticized by columnists around the state. And only now is the speaker speaking, talking a little bit about what all of this meant, his side of the story. He agreed to sit down with me on Thursday afternoon in our studio across the street from the state capitol. And what follows is the entire conversation, in its entirety unedited, with Assembly Speaker Fabia Nunez, where we talk a little bit about campaign finances, and we also talk about health care and a few of the issues in the special session. And I started off by asking the speaker to, quite frankly, explain where all of that money went. Let's just get right to the issue that people have been talking about, the expenses in question that came out of your campaign finance account. I think people just asking, how are they related to state government? I mean, some people have said that maybe you were spending the money on yourself or people around you.
Yeah. Well, first of all, let me just clear the air on it. For anybody who thinks that I was spending any campaign contributions for myself, that's totally false. These are all appropriate expenses that were made. Most of these expenses, those that have been in question in particular, that have been expenditures abroad, these have been trade missions where, you know, California is the eighth largest economy in the world. And as a speaker of the state assembly, I represent California, and I've done it numerous times. Four or five times I've gone abroad. And I get invited by heads of state. I get invited by governments. And I got to travel to these countries. And when I go there, it's not cheap. You know, you have to pay for it. And the question here, the fundamental question is, how do you pay for these trade missions? Do you use taxpayer dollars or not? If the answer is yes to the first one, then how do you justify to taxpayers going on trade missions to promote California that while you're making cuts to social programs and the budget and to education programs, you're going to go out and travel? I mean, bad enough that people are actually giving us a pretty bad rap in the press about these expenditures. But the good news is that for the last 4 years, they've been on the record. A lot of these things that they're talking about have been on the record for 3 or 4 years. All you got to do is go on your computer, punch a button with the Fair Political Practices Commission, and it lays out how much money I spent and where I spent it. And under the law, I have every right to make these expenditures, whether I'm buying gifts for members of my delegation or for dignitaries, because, you know, proper protocol says you visit somewhere, you give your hosts a gift.
But let's talk about
like
part
that.
Of that, because, sure. I mean, some of the expenses that got headlines were, you know, $8,700 at a hotel in Barcelona and $5,100 at a French winery, money at Louis Vuitton, $2,500. What were those for? That's what people have asked.
Yeah,
can you describe what they're for?
Well, yeah, let me, and I'm not going to go through my whole report. I mean, obviously, there's, you know, about 250 to 350 pages of expenditures, but there's also a lot of pages of contributions. And in fact, most of the money that I raise, I spend on making sure that we keep a solid Democratic majority. But with respect to some of those expenses, let me just take you for a moment. You mentioned Barcelona, $8,700.
$8,700.
When I took that trip to Barcelona, that was a sister-to-sister California-Catalan relationship. It's a state that has approximately 35 million people, just like California. It pays the biggest share to the national coffers there in Spain, just like California does. And we have a lot in common. We have a 25-year relationship with Catalonia. Now, on that visit, I was invited by the president of Catalonia and the Speaker of the House of Parliament from Catalonia to go visit. And they suggested what hotel I go to, which is about four blocks from the palace That's where I stayed. But interestingly enough, to move me and the delegation around, we rented a small minivan, a Volkswagen minivan. The driver, just to drive you around, is about, 1,100 euros. Plus, you need a translator that can speak English, Spanish, and can speak Catalan. So just that alone, you know, you're there four or five days, could be close to $2,000 a day. So, you know, those things need to be put into context. And I know when you just look at a number, it says, well, what is this? Well, it really is a legitimate expenditure in the quest to promote trade between California and Catalan.
I think clearly some of it comes, though, because the way the forms are organized, there's not a lot of specificity as to where that goes. And let me just, you know, at the risk of, I don't want to do too many of these, but just.
Yes, you do. You want to do a couple.
I don't want to do too many of these, but one of the others that comes up is things that were listed as office expenses, Louis Vuitton and Nordstrom, and large amounts of money to places that people wouldn't think are office
And there's expenses. There's certain categories, I guess, and, you know, I mean, I don't know. I'm not the lawyer. I don't do the paperwork on any of this, but there's certain categories that expenses get listed. And one of those categories is gifts that you buy. And of course, you know, I have bought gifts, like on the trade mission that I was to study high speed rail. I bought gifts on the earlier trade mission that I did to Paris and Stockholm to study preschools. I went on that mission, and you know, other people organized the event for us, and the hosts that brought us there. I bought them gifts, and I think one of those was Louis Vuitton and others. But you know, there's, you know, multiple gifts for people. It's pretty expensive, high end stores, of course, and I know they draw a lot of attention. But you got to give folks. I mean, you're not required to give them gifts, but it's the proper thing to do to give folks gifts. And I'm not going to use taxpayer money to do those gifts with. And if, of course, I use my own money, my wife would kill me.
One of the other things, and again, just trying to make sure we have your side of the story, is, you know, a quote you gave to the LA Times has kind of reverberated out there, which is this notion about where you said, quote, there's not a big difference between how I live and how most middle class people live. And
so are you trying to say I put my foot in my mouth with that quote?
Some people have wondered how you can say that in light of the expenses. Do you think that wasn't the right thing?
Well, let me just tell you. First of all, I think I was quoted totally out of context. That's not what I was saying. And if you would have read the full quote, or if Nancy, who I respect, she's a good journalist, if Nancy Vogel would have written out the full quote and put it in the proper context, she was asking about all the travel. You've gone to a lot of countries. She says, how do you explain all of this? And you use your campaign expenses. I said, look, other speakers have spent general fund monies that, you know, we have under our jurisdiction, which, by the way, you can't push a button and go to the FPPC and get those reports on those. You won't know about those, but it's taxpayer money. But I refuse to use those monies. I use my campaign gifts. So when she asked about this, I said, look, Nancy, I don't have a G4 or a G6. I'm not independently wealthy. I can't pick up, and when I get invited to go to Davos, Switzerland, to give three keynote speeches for the World Economic Forum, I can't pick up and take Steve Maviglio with me and jump on my private jet and get there and come back and pay out of my own pocket. I don't have that kind of money. That was the context I was saying. I was saying, in that context, I'm a middle-class person. I'm not an extremely wealthy person. But I make no apologies about my economic success or my political success, for that matter. Everybody knows I come from a poor family of humble means. But you know what? I've worked my butt off my whole life to pick myself up, to live the American dream, to take advantage of this dream called California and the opportunities it provides. And so I'm proud of that. But each and every day, when I'm in the Capitol, I fight for those underprivileged people that live the types of life I lived when I was a young man.
Have any of the people who've given money to your campaign called you in the last week and expressed concern about how the money's being spent? Is there any blowback, for lack of a better term, from people who give money to you?
Interestingly, you asked that question. I haven't heard from one single person yet. I have seen people quoted in the newspaper. Mainly it had been two different or three different entities, but it's really the same people that they have the right to be upset or do whatever they want to do. The California Nurses Association has been pretty vocal. Why? They want government-run health care, single payer. I don't necessarily oppose it, but I want to do the practical thing. I want real health care for working people, and I want it now. I don't want to wait 20 years to get it. So they'll say negative things, and you know, I've read some. The Hotel Workers Union, they're upset at me. I can understand why they're upset. You know, I don't have a 100% record with them, and their last issue, I didn't fight for them. them the way they wanted me to, so therefore they're pretty down on me, and they're going to, you know, kick the can around a little bit, and they have every right to do that, and I encourage them to continue to do that. But I do think that at some point in time, we've got to look at all of this in a very objective manner. California is the 8th largest economy in the world. I'm the Speaker of the California State Assembly. The fundamental question for us is two. First, one, should I or should I not be representing California in trade missions? That's the first question we have to ask ourselves. The second question that we ought to ask ourselves is whether or not, when we go on these trade missions, should we be paying hard-earned taxpayer money, or should we be using campaign funds, or should we be resorting to nonprofit organizations to pay for them where there's no disclosure whatsoever? If a nonprofit organization had paid for all these travels, you and I would not be having this conversation.
And you're talking about the kinds of things that Governor Schwarzenegger has
used. I'm not saying Governor Schwarzenegger in particular.
But he's used them, right.
I know there's a lot of nonprofit organizations that sponsor trips. Hey, look. Let's be honest. I've been on some of these trips, of CIFI sponsored trips. I went on one to South America with CIFI, and we got beat up for going on this trade mission, which incidentally was one of the most important trade missions I've been on, to learn about what progressive countries like Brazil are doing about alternative fuels. And yeah, while I was at a dinner, I paid for dinner for, you know, 18 or 20 people, and it was a pretty big bill. But, you know, I'm the Speaker of the Assembly. I represent California. I got to figure out how we do this. So fundamentally, we really, as you know, when it's all said and done on this issue, we've got to figure out what is the best policy to deal with this, because all along, I've been protecting the state coffers. If you look at my budget as an assembly speaker in comparison to other years and other speakers, I am very tight-fisted with the people's money. So I got to figure out how to deal with it, because I've been very careful not to dip into those funds for foreign travel. I've used some of it, but I've used very little. So if the criticism here is don't use campaign contributor money, then whose money should I use to continue to promote California? Or maybe people don't think we should be promoting California goods around the
world.
Well,
I think one of the criticisms, just briefly, is this notion that interest groups that give you money are buying influence. That's a traditional, time-honored thing you hear in politics. And so, I mean, that's one of the questions is, you know, who's giving you money? What does that mean about their access? And then what do they get in return?
I'll give you – that's a great point, a great question, and which is why all of this is on the record, which is why I felt the most appropriate way to make these types of campaign expenditures is with political contributors' money, because it's the only money that's really reported. And you can look at who my contributors are. For example, pharmaceutical industry. I don't know how much they've contributed to me over the years. Let's say $80,000 or $100,000. I have a bill sitting before the governor, AB8, fundamental health care reform bill, that would allow the state to do bulk purchasing of prescription drugs. Guess what? The industry hates that bill. But just because they've given me a contribution doesn't mean they're going to influence my decision making. My beliefs are going to be advanced one way or another, irrespective of who contributes to my political campaign. I'm a prolific fundraiser. There's no question about it. But nobody can ever question my commitment to being a core Democrat and fighting for issues for working and middle-class families.
Then finally on this issue, do you think that the complaint that's been filed with the FPPC, does it lack merit then? Is that what I would hear you
well,
say?
Well, I mean, it's a false complaint, obviously, coming from a group who is a very questionable group. The head of the committee to the Anti-Term Limits Initiative Committee, I mean, I don't even know their name off the top of my head. You might
That's
know.
That's close enough.
Whatever their name is. I mean, the guy who's the head of it, you know, was in Oklahoma, just been indicted. He can face up to 10 years in jail for frauding voters. So obviously, you know, a complaint coming from a group like that, I don't know how legitimate it would be. But I respect the Fair Political Practices Commission. And obviously, you know, I got nothing to hide with them. You know, this all of my expenditures have been reviewed by first a bookkeeper, then an auditor, and then a lawyer. So I feel very, very good about all these expenses. They're perfectly legal. They're on the up and up. And I know that some people say, well, why do you say that these expenses were necessary? How can they be necessary? You know, don't you think they're a little bit too extravagant? And that's for people to judge. But, you know, I guess if I were to travel to Africa, the dollar would go a little bit, you know, further. But I mean, you go to Europe, you order a cup of coffee, it's going to cost you $15, and you know it's expensive over there. And you know, some people say you stay at extravagant hotels. You know where I stayed in Bordeaux? A Best Western. I stayed at a Best. Now, okay, I hosted a big dinner. It was expensive. You know, on the dollar, it was expensive. It was a big group of people. that were on that delegation. But I'm the Speaker of the Assembly. I felt it necessary, and it was incumbent upon me to pay for some of the expenses that were required as a part of that travel.
So while we've got time to talk to you, let me ask you about some of the things that are going on here at the Capitol.
Please, thank you very much.
Some of the issues.
Yeah, this is why I really haven't wanted to be distracted by this. I figured, you know, they'll do a story or two, and then everybody moves on. I've been focused single-handedly on health care and water, and I would split that time about 80-20. 80% of my time is being focused on health care reform. We're not giving up. We're going to fight and fight and fight until we can convince the governor that employers got to pay their fair share.
Well, let's talk about it, because the governor came out with a financing proposal this week that was different. And first and foremost, it had money from privatizing the lottery. What do you think of that?
Well, look, you know, I'm not afraid of privatizing the lottery, at least leasing the lottery. But it does come with a lot of complications and a lot of uncertainties. And we need to make sure that we dot the I's and cross the T's with respect to whether or not it's even feasible to lease the California lottery. And then we got to look at what kind of opposition that might draw as well, because there's no guarantee that we're going to lease it for 40 years and draw $48 billion or $38 billion from that lease. And you got people who are going to lose their jobs over it, 400 people that work for the lottery. And so, you know, I think we need more certainty first before we even consider it in a serious manner.
So am I hearing what you're saying, that it complicates the issue over healthcare somewhat?
Well, not so much that it complicates it. I think what complicates the issue over healthcare, and this has been the case all along, is the financing. How do you finance fundamental health care reform? And I think there's three ways to finance it. First, you need to tighten the belt of everybody who's making money in the industry, and you got to start at the top. You got to start with the health insurance industry. These are the folks that are making the most money. And let's face it, the private health insurers like Blue Cross are the ones that are making money hand and fist. We've got to make sure that the bulk of the money that they draw as a consequence of the premiums that people are paying in their business model, that they spent the vast majority of their money back into patient care. I'm not convinced that we've gone far enough where that's concerned. Okay, we require them now to spend 85%, and the governor does that in his latest proposal, 85% of every dollar they got to spend on patient care. But I want to make sure that they do two other things. One, that they don't turn anybody away, including somebody with a pre-existing condition. And two, that they do not use this mandatory hammer that the governor has in his bill that everybody must have health care insurance as a means to charge whatever they want for the cost of health care or for the cost of the health care insurance premium. So we've got to figure this thing out. And that's where we got to start. And then we got to go to employers. If the average employer pays 13.5% of their payroll to pay for a portion of the cost of the health care of their workers, why should we let all the other employers who are not paying off the hook? Why should we bring them down to a 4% requirement?
Or less, I think, as the governor talked about this week, this sliding scale.
Yeah, he went from a solid 4% from a 4% with a sliding scale. I tell you what, 7.5% is low. 7.5% is too low, but it is just about where we're going to be. You're not going to see a whole lot of movement from us from there. You know, I think the governor needs to come to the realization that it's time to tell employers that they too need to step up to the plate, and they have an obligation and a responsibility to be part of the solution. Government has to be part of the solution. The employee has to be part of the solution. But we cannot let employers off the hook here, because, you know, part of this is balancing the scales, making sure that we have a level playing field. I want to make sure that if Safeway and all the Ralph supermarkets and the Vons, all those folks are paying health care insurance, you know, why should companies like Walmart get away with not doing it?
So would I be correct in saying that you're not going to carry the governor's bill?
I'm not carrying the governor's bill. No Democrats carrying the governor's bill. We will give the governor the courtesy of a bill. It might be a bill without an author. It might be a committee bill. But we did tell the governor. I personally committed to the governor. We'll get you a bill.
And a hearing on the bill, I guess, sometime soon?
Absolutely. In the next couple of weeks, you'll have an informational hearing. I'm hoping that between now and then I can convince them to sign AB 8, because I think AB 8 is the closest step to tangible healthcare reform. Now, it's not universal, but it's affordable healthcare reform. See, universal sometimes people confuse, because I can tell you I have universal healthcare if I mandate that everybody carry healthcare insurance. Oh, okay, that could be universal. But that could be a universal mandate as opposed to making sure that people have healthcare as a right and not a privilege. You can still do mandatory healthcare as a responsibility and obligation, but is it a right? Are you giving people the best care, and can they afford to pay for their out-of-pocket costs? Can they afford their prescription drugs? Can they afford their out-of-pocket fees and their premiums? And all these things have to be taken into consideration.
So given how important this issue is to you, you said a little while back that you thought that health care was tied to water bonds and the water issue. Are they tied? Are they linked? Does one have to happen for
the
other to happen?
I think what I said is I don't want a runaway legislature that does an $8 billion bond on water and walks away from health care. I want health care. And healthcare is at the top of my list. Water is very important. There's no question about it. And I'm learning more and more about California's water infrastructure needs. And I realize how important it is. But healthcare is at the top of my list. And I think they're both important.
And on the issue of water, is there any chance of money for dams, specifically earmarked for dams, to have any chance in your caucus in the Assembly?
I don't think there's a chance to specifically earmark. I think to say that you can compete for funds is one thing, but to earmark money specifically for dams, that's not going to happen. That effort fell apart already. I think we saw some expressions of that last week when the Senate took the vote on what Democrats could do. But that doesn't mean everybody's walked away from the table. We're still talking. We're still engaged. We want to solve California's water problems. But I got to tell you, reuse, recycling of water, better conservation of water have to be part of the component, and user fees for non-residential users. All those things need to be taken into consideration, because at the end of the day, you don't want bond money to be used to make, giveaways for people who are going to use it for industry purposes and not pay it back. We need to have some kind of a plan that requires some payback to these bonds so that we can recuperate 60 or 70% of that. I mean, if you look back in history, every time we've done a water bond, we've gotten paid back at least 80% of the resources that we've put on the table.
So the pro tem this week said he might go to the ballot with this. Would you support that?
I yet to have a conversation with Senator Parada about the ballot strategy, but I share his frustration that, if Republicans are going to draw the line in the sand at the expense of Californians who are in desperate need of water and who 2-3 years from now are going to find it very difficult to have the water supply that they require, particularly in the Central Valley and in parts of Southern California. I got to tell you, those of us that are responsible and that want to do the right thing for California have got to look beyond this strategy, which is the strategy of legislation. We got to look at the other strategy, which do we go to the voters? I commend Senator Parada for putting that challenge out there, because I think if we can't find a solution that is a legislative solution, we're going to have to think about going straight to the voters. But, this is what happens when you have ideologues on the right drawing the line in the sand and saying, we want everything we want or else. You just can't do business that way.
So before you get the hook here, talking about going to the voters, term limits, are you going to campaign for the term limits initiative, do you think? Or is it possible, as some might say at this point, that you're somewhat radioactive on the issue, given the headlines, even though I know you would take issue with what they were talking about? But some people would say that's another reason of excesses of lawmakers. Fabian Nunez shouldn't be in the Assembly any longer. Do you campaign for it?
Well, I mean, I think, it's got to be put in a proper context. I think term limits reform is important. I think you need to establish real institutional memory in the legislature. I think that it's time for people to stop running from office to office. They're politicians. We've got to change that. We've got to make politicians policymakers again. That's what it used to be, and I think we need to go back to that, even if you have a term limits cap of 12 years. Will I campaign for it? It depends whether or not the campaign sees it important and ask me to campaign for it. I will. In the meantime, I'll help raise funds for the initiative and do whatever is asked of me.
Would you campaign for the Indian gaming compacts that might be referendum that you thought were a good plan and helped ratify?
Well, this was a very difficult issue for me, the Indian gaming compacts. I was caught between the subsidies that this would generate for the general fund to offset the cost of health care and providing services to poor people, over $300 million a year. And, you know, the desire to want to continue supporting my friends in organized labor that have every right to fight for, you know, better working conditions for their workers. I was caught between those two things. It was a difficult decision that I made, but I think I made the right decision in retrospect. You know, I went with doing what's right for California. And unfortunately, it didn't help everybody. But, you know, I have no plans of going out there and campaigning in favor of the referendum or against the referendum.
You took all the questions I had.
There you go.
Mr. Speaker, thanks for the time.
Thank you very much for the interview.
That was, again, Assembly Speaker Fabian Nunez, Democrat of Los Angeles, speaking to me here in our state capitol studios on Thursday afternoon. That'll do it for this week. Next week, we'll be back to hopefully the regular gang and the regular mix of topics. For KQED and the California Report, I'm John Myers. We'll see you next time.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from Acura, featuring the TL Type S with a 286-horsepower V6 and real-time traffic alerts. Learn more at Acura.com.